The second podcast of this series introduces Kara Smith, an incredible artist and music therapist who wears many hats and has worked in a variety of music therapy programs. She is the founder of Umoja Global. Founded in 2014, Umoja Global Community Music Therapy strives to promote music therapy practices in global communities. It is with this wonderful organization that I got to travel to Kenya exactly a year ago and learned so much about what community music therapy can do. She started this organization while she was still a student at the Berklee College of Music. Umoja is now an associate member of the World Federation of Music Therapy, and currently their work is based in East Africa. They collaborate with communities throughout Kenya and Uganda with a focus on female empowerment. As discussed previously, everyone's version of what music therapy means to them is different. So naturally, the first thing I asked Kara was what music therapy meant to her.
My understanding of music therapy is tied into human rights and our history as human beings and our history with having a relationship with music. I would say that's where my understanding of music therapy comes from. I've always sort of approached music therapy the way an ethnomusicologist approaches music and its relation to communities in the world. It's an emotional tool. It's a tool for well-being. It's a tool for optimal health and wellness, for identity. By doing the music, by engaging in the music and learning about it and asking people about their musical life, you are honoring them. You are holding a very special part of who they are and their life and their stories. You're honoring their stories. You're preserving this emotional part of their humanity and protecting it. To me, human rights is the preservation and the protection of something that is naturally theirs and under the possible threat of oppression. It's the people's music and the people's art that tends to be oppressed or destroyed or overpowered, whitewashed in some way. And so this is such a different aspect of what music therapy is. I can't say that that is what music therapy is. That is what music therapy is to me.
The journey from the US to East Africa is a long one, to say the least. I was curious to know how exactly the seed for working specifically in East Africa took root for Kara. How did she get there and take the enormous step to start an organization in a faraway country while still being a student?
My interest in international music therapy started when I was still a student at Berklee. I did not do a lot of, I want to say, quote unquote, traditional music therapy work before starting Umoja. I was a performer and a world music nerd first while studying music therapy. So really my pursuit of Umoja, the building of Umoja came from my love for world music, my love for African music. It started in East Africa because I was traveling to East Africa as a singer and as a performer. And I had met so many incredible people and come in contact with so many amazing places and communities. And I just became so inspired. While I was a music therapy student at the time, so I'm looking at these contexts from a music therapy perspective. And so I became really curious to go back and learn more and investigate how music therapy might exist in these spaces. What is music therapy to these people? That's really where the roots took hold in this region of the world, is because I was going there as a musician and as a performer.
Each site we visited in Kenya was a whole different experience. Every intervention and plan differed from site to site, population to population, and with their needs. to make the Kenyan community music therapy experience a bit more tangible to all of you listening today, I asked Kara to describe one of the sites we visited, Shofco, in the slums of Nairobi.
You know, I think the communities we work with in East Africa, it's a microcosm for what the majority of the world looks like. In the southern hemisphere of the globe, there is so many sociopolitical issues. There's so much poverty. There's a lot of inequality. Of course, there's inequality in the United States, by all means. I still think, you know, the extent of the sociopolitical challenges, we don't really see where we're from, and so it's those challenges and those communities that we work with in Kenya. It's what the most of the world looks like. By starting to build a program and a protocol for using music for empowerment and resilience and an answer to the inequality and an answer to the psychosocial problems that comes from inequality, it can be applied anywhere in the world that may be experiencing the same challenges. And we are working mainly with, you know, we have a female empowerment focus. We work with survivors of violence. We work with survivors of gender inequality and, you know, groups who are affected by systemic inequality.
Each site we visited in Kenya was a whole different experience. Every intervention and plan differed from site to site, population to population, depending on the people's needs. To make the Kenyan community music therapy experience a bit more tangible to all of you listening today, I asked Kara to describe one of the sites we visited, Shofco, in the slums of Nairobi, and also to describe the music therapy song intervention called the Lotus Song that she had crafted. What really does a music therapy intervention mean to her in her kind of work?
Shofco is an anti-poverty NGO that is situated in the slums of Nairobi. They offer programs that address water sanitation, they address women's education, they address gender-based violence, they address these really specific socio-political problems exacerbated by poverty. And so we work really closely with them in bringing music into their programs and music therapy into their programs. So I wrote this song called The Lotus Song, and it's a music therapy intervention, and it is a resilience activity and a sort of an emotional catharsis activity where the song is taught and the lyrics are about rising above one's challenges and rising above trauma. And while the song is being taught, there are these little flowers made of seed paper. There are flower seeds embedded in the paper, and the participants are invited to write down something they want to bury in the ground, something they want to let go of. And so we mainly do this with survivors of violence. We mainly do this with even, you know, just young girls, young women who have hopes and dreams. And we invite them to think about something they want to let go of, something maybe they regret or something they're afraid of, feelings associated with their pain or their survivorship. We explain to them that when they go home, plant these in the ground, water it regularly, and flowers will grow. And it's supposed to indicate that, you know, beauty comes from strife. Beauty can come from pain. Really, any intervention or any musical engagement that is done with a survivor of inequality or with a survivor of violence, it's not necessarily about the particular song or the particular intervention, because again, that's very context dependent. That will look different wherever you go, but it's about the way the space is held. And it's about inviting this individual to sing and to dance and to voice their story, to hear their story. I think the most empowering thing you can do for somebody is listen to them and let them speak. And maybe they're not speaking in words. Maybe they're speaking through their body. They're speaking through dance. They're speaking through an instrument. And just by creating a space where their story can be told and they are being listened to unconditionally and humbly, I think that is the intervention. That is the therapy.
Having worked with Umoja, I can definitely attest to the fact that they strive to create meaningful engagements and approach music therapy as an allyship before anything else. However, scrutiny about white saviorism and what it means to be culturally humble definitely does come up. I asked Kara how she dealt with these questions and felt about this.
It's a good thing. It means people are paying attention. And gone are the days when it was a normal action that Westerners are walking into these third world countries and foreign spaces and establishing their own culture, establishing their own institutions there. And it was considered normal, if not noble. Gone are the days where that is okay. People are paying more attention and being more aware and understanding when a group of white people walk into these communities in Africa, it should be met with scrutiny and questions. What are you doing? Is your presence there potentially harmful? I'm so glad people are asking these questions now. One thing that sets us apart from being called white saviors is we are students, we're academics, we are therapists. And so we are approaching these communities and these spaces as observers and as participants. I don't necessarily think there's anything wrong with that. And I actually think, gosh, I don't think isolationism is the answer to racism. I actually think it exacerbates racism. Telling everybody, you're not allowed to travel to these places, you stay home, let the communities in Africa remain as they are, untouched, that exacerbates the problems in the world today. And I think the answer to racism and the answer to white saviorism is interaction, but the right kind of interaction. It has to be humble. And the answer to racism is kindness. And it's when you create a space where someone's music can be shared and participated in and loved, and there's artistic sharing and there's honor. There's so much honor in the music and in the art that is being shared in these spaces. That is the answer to racism. And it has nothing to do with religion. It has nothing to do with giving things or providing things. That is allyship. It's about being an ally in these spaces. So my answer to people who are like, you guys are white saviors, no, we are musical allies. That is all we're doing.
As a music therapist, a vocalist, a creative person, and most importantly, an empathetic member of this world community, I often wonder what is the most important thing to be the best music therapist that I can be. So to conclude this segment, I asked Kara what she would tell aspiring music therapists who may be listening in today. What does she consider the most important thing to be the best music therapist and person that one can be?
Be ready to dive really, really deeply into yourself. Come to terms with uncomfortable feelings or uncomfortable perceptions that you have about yourself, reacquaint yyourself with them and love them. Love all parts of yourself. You know, at the program at Berkeley, it was, you know, all about competency, just like, well, learn guitar, be good at guitar, learn piano, be good at piano, read these books, get the theory down. There were lots of parts of me, you know, my inner child, that was injured and needed healing. And I didn't realize that that was necessary in order to be a good music therapist or the best music therapist that I can hope to be. What I've really found is you can't hold space for highly vulnerable people if you yourself cannot let yourself go there.
A huge thank you to everyone who's tuning in to listen to these sessions. I'm sure it's been as educational for you as it has been for me to know these people and to have these conversations. Kara is currently completing her Master's in Music Therapy program at the University of Pretoria in Pretoria, South Africa, the only music therapy program on the African continent. She continues to educate herself about community music therapy, cultural humility, and nurturing Umoja to reach more people and communities. Thank you so much for listening once again.